Well, hey, welcome to the Gundam Explained show live. I'm your host, Adam Blue. Joining me as always, Steven with the Disney shirt. Just noticed.
Nice. Yeah, I guess I'm wearing the costume of the enemy here, the uniform of my enemies. honestly, this shirt has a lot of fond memories for me because the last time I went to Disney World was in 2016, which was the year that I graduated from grad school and got married. And as a gift to my wife, who had never been to Disney World at that point, I was like, hey, thank you for putting up with me while I was going through grad school. Let's go to Disney World and drink around Epcot and, like, you know, wow, do all the good stuff. So this shirt came from that trip.
Okay, I can see why. Yeah, that's meaningful. That's
sentimental value. So yeah, ever since, you know, obviously things that they've done with Star Wars make me feel icky wearing it. But, you know, then I'm like,
It's funny. I had
a good time with my wife.
Well, it's funny. I had this conversation twice with two different people this week. I forgot what it was, but it's like where we appreciate some things corporations are doing, even though we can recognize the bad choices when sometimes it revolves around the money, you know, what they want to do with the money. So,
yeah. That's one thing that Disney's always gotten right, though, I think, is the theme parks.
Yeah. I mean, it is magical. you know, there is something about when I was a kid, you know, when I went, I loved it. And then even when I went recently, in fact, I keep a photo on my desk of the family when we went to Disney, and just even that, you know, it's because you're seeing, it's almost like being on a movie set.
It is. Yeah.
You know, yeah. Cause everything around you is fake. Even like the wall of the restaurant, it's like a fake wall of a restaurant.
Exactly. Right. And so much of it, I think, is it's got this surreal aspect to it where, you know, you're going to this, looks like a tavern, right? It's like, you know, reclaimed wood and these bar stools and things like that. And you're going to have yourself an Italian flatbread, which is really just cafeteria pizza. That's like,
yeah.
it's such a fascinating experience. How did your kids like it?
Oh yeah, they liked it.
I mean,
it's, you know, I think what's interesting is the thinking of the balance between like roller coasters versus like entertainment attractions, you know, and the roller coasters at first seemed like the fun thing to do. But like, you know, especially like Tower of Terror, how it drops, they weren't crazy about that. And they were like, rather, you know, go do the fun things around there. Even the older ones, I kind of felt that too. The merch, there's something about being surrounded by like exclusive merch.
Yeah.
You don't see anywhere else. And it kind of,
see, that's something that, like, I think that the Gundam base needs to take advantage of is like, there needs to be when there's a Gundam base type pop up or something like that. I think the problem is that it's not quite exclusive enough of an experience. And this goes back to what we were talking about last night, where, you know, I mentioned watching Vampy Bit Me doing the beta card game unboxing. And, you know, there was a lot of FOMO involved with that because obviously you and I missed out on getting that.
Yeah.
But seeing what was in it, it's like, well, there's really not a whole lot in it that I would really want. So it kind of diffuses the magic of that experience. And so I wonder, I don't know, you know, it can go either way, right? Like you either want it accessible to everyone so that everyone can enjoy it, or you want it limited to where people, you know, have to partake in this particular experience that you want to cultivate.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a good point bringing up the stuff around that, because, you know, what makes Disney magical is for some, depending where you live, the traveling to get there, it's like,
there's that pilgrimage.
Exactly. And it's like worth it. And then that's another aspect that makes Disney work, is there is effort to get there, but then when you get there, it's still like, yeah, that was worth doing. And so, yeah, Gundam doing something like that, but it's interesting. Nintendo, you know, they have a Nintendo Land. I think it's in California.
Yeah.
And then there's one that's being built right now, just north of me, less than an hour away.
Yeah, that's so cool.
And that is. And so they have like that Minecraft experience that's been going around. There was one here and I should have went and missed it. So I feel like these live attractions are a thing, but I do think there is a sort of barrier to entry. Like it could be distance, but if there was a way, and I think this is cheating, but it might be virtual reality, you know, what if, you know, a company is able to build a way to have a virtual experience in a real attraction and maybe meet up with other people? I don't know.
Yeah, you know, during COVID, one of my favorite music artists, Porter Robinson, did, I guess it was like the second Sky Festival. So he did like a secret Sky Festival where it was like a bunch of musicians basically live streamed their set. But then he did one where it all took place in VR, and there was like a sound stage. And so it was like he was performing, but people could walk around in VR and interact with the other people that were attending the concert.
That's cool.
Which is such a, I mean, it's like such a cool experience. And maybe that's the way that GBWC needs to go. Is,
yeah, almost like kind of creating a sort of themed metaverse component.
Yeah.
You know, where it's like, yeah, there's a way to communicate with others and it's through a metaverse component. But
that does seem to be the direction they're going. But I have to point this out, is like, I think that no matter how good technology gets and how awesome these experiences and the merch and those things can be, at the end of the day, I think that people really make the difference when it comes to these attractions, when it comes to theme parks and stuff. And one of the reasons that VR has not taken off in that regard is because there's no human component to it that can replace, like, and the memory's so vivid because, like, my wife and I were there in the Tower of Terror, and the guy that was running the set and, you know, was wearing the hotel lobby,
yeah,
you know, the elevator, yeah, the usher, yeah, uniform, you know, when he was narrating to us and, you know, saying like, oh, you know, I need you guys to sign all these waivers and stuff like that. And then right before he dropped us, he was like, okay, guys, there's three things I need you all to remember before we start. You know, first, make sure you keep your hands inside. Second, do this. And then three, and he hit the button without saying what the third thing was. And just like,
yeah.
And you can tell that, like, he so much loves that job and is so underappreciated. I guarantee you he's underpaid, but like, that's the kind of thing that makes the experience really magical.
You know what? I think that's it, learning from you and all that. That's kind of related to like a game master in a tabletop, you know, because it's almost like setting the experience. They kind of have the insight into what's going on, setting the experience up. And yeah, I think, and that also reminds me of, I think it's been a while, but my company would do like the virtual, puzzle rooms, trap rooms. What are they called? You know?
Oh yeah. Escape rooms. Yeah. Escape rooms.
There you go. And then there would be someone on there, and sometimes they can add to it, or sometimes they might be boring and be like, nope, that's not it. You know? And yeah, but yeah, so, yeah, good start of the show, because I was going to say, with that shirt over the weekend, I found an awesome Mickey shirt and I could have worn it. It's kind of funny. I got it. It's just a square in the center with the profile of Mickey's face. And there's Japanese letters on the side.
Oh, that's cool.
It could be offensive language. I don't know, but it's just a cool shirt. So, yeah.
Honestly, I think that you need more Japanese themed Gundam Explained merch.
Oh, that is a great idea. And it's crazy because everything has been Japanese themed for me. In fact, when I bought that Mickey shirt that was Japanese themed, I also bought a Zombie Samurai shirt because I started getting rid of all my graphic tees because I like wear these all the time, and I was like, I need some more graphic tees. But also, you know, I've been playing Rise of the Ronin, you know.
Yeah,
I've nearly beat it, but then Assassin's Creed Shadows dropped and I've been playing that.
Okay, so you did put down Rise of the Ronin for Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, and it's funny, they are very different games for seeming like they're similar. I would say Rise of the Ronin is like playing an open world Metal Gear Revengeance. Let's put it that way. And then Assassin's Creed is that, you know, typical kind of, it has survival elements
in the world.
So they're different enough. And it's neat because the combat in Assassin's Creed is slower paced. So the animations look super realistic. Whereas in Rise of the Ninja, or
Rise
of the Ronin, it's all about fast-paced character action.
It's so snappy and responsive. Yeah. It's such a hard balance to strike when it comes to video games. And you know, bringing it full circle into Gundam, one of the things that's constantly debated is what kind of gameplay feels like Gundam. Because to some people, that's GBO2. It's kind of like a mech sim. It's a little slower, a little bit more deliberate in your movements. To other people, it's more like, no, I want Gundam Versus. I want to be able to zip around in the air and do all these like crazy combos and things like that. And so finding that balance between the two can be very tricky.
And you know what I think might be a smart forward approach? A lot of these things I think require planning. And I think with these big corporations, they do plan, but then they change them all the time. And I think Warner Bros. Is a good example where sometimes they don't commit to something. And so then they just move on. And it's like, but what I think would be neat if Bandai did was made the different AUs different genres. Because I would see Seed be more of the fast-paced, you know, like shooter. Exactly. And then make the UC stuff very tanky, you know, games. Even though they have the Zeta stuff, and that could be, you know, it's a thing. But I think you could even go, you know, like what if they grab 00 and then just made that more of a like a team tactical game, just because it's all about the teams and their different loadouts, you know. I think anyway.
No, I think that's
always could talk about these video games.
Absolutely.
Can't wait for that Seed one in May, you know.
Yeah, that's gonna be a fun port.
Well, speaking of Seed. I know that I've let you down recently, but I've made other people happy that I'm like so into the Mighty Strike. I'm going to do a screen share. So I posted this picture in the Discord, but from left to right, we have the Master Grade EX with the third party. Oh, what is it called? The White Slash. It's the one that Taco and Yoshi got for the Proud Defender. And then, there's the Blu-ray limited edition exclusive clear sparkle color Mighty Strike. And then we have the SD one at the bottom. And then one that just came out in Japan is the Metal Robot Spirits Mighty Strike Freedom and Proud Defender add-on pack, which
sweet.
I was just lucky that Ami Ami had one pre-owned because they sold out initially when they went up for pre-order. And then I have the Chogokin. And then below the Chogokin is the Mobile Suit Ensemble. And I think I've kind of figured out what I'm being drawn to. And okay. I relate it to, and I think you can understand this, seasons of TV shows when they come out and it sets what it is, but then after a while, they kind of have to go an extreme. And
yeah.
I am seeing, this is like Kunio's Okawara.
Yeah.
Okawara. I feel like this is his refined extreme design. You know, it's like it's kind of a refined Universal Century type Gundam, but with the Seed aesthetics of being a little more slim and jaggy, even though he doesn't necessarily draw them fully slim, they kind of get interpreted that way in the show. But then everything that has to do with his touch of that mechanical, the panels are just in the right places to make it look like a machine. And lastly, I'm a fan of mobile suits that are mostly white, but also gold, because I feel like that's like crazy. Like there's no reason, you know, for
it's just ostentatious. Like,
yeah. And it's, I think it's one of the least durable metals. You wouldn't make something gold for armor purposes. So, anyway,
but it is highly electrically conductive.
Oh, that. Okay.
So maybe
because of the later, powers that it does.
Yeah, that could be it.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Conduct electricity.
And in fact, what's really cool about the Proud Defender is it came with the whole, like that electrical thing that happens. So I'll cover that in the review.
Nice.
But also I want to like almost self-analyze.
Okay.
Right before getting into this, there was a lot of like Godzillas. And then right before this, there's a lot of Batmans. You see how there's, and then before I think there's like X-Men or Wolverine or something. It's that vibe. And
Street Fighter.
What's that?
And Street Fighter. I remember you. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. It's that vibe thing where I feel like a thing represents a lot to me that makes me excited. Like I tell you, the past 2 weeks, I've just been building and building. And so I feel like, you know, sometimes someone might be like, man, are you obsessed? What? But it's like, wow, no, I've found some fun that I can like focus on. And I feel like it's almost studying because I now have a very vivid understanding of the sort of layout of the Seed Freedom, like, or the, yeah, the, no, the Strike.
Mighty Strike
Freedom. Yeah. I got all these names. And so this kind of goes into what my next plan is. Out of all these, what we don't see yet that I still have is the standard high grade release.
Yeah. What you're really missing is some justice in there.
I'm afraid that's what's going to happen next.
What you're telling me is that I need to collect every variation of justice, Infinite Justice Spec 2, just so that I can, because I do feel sometimes that you and I are the yin to each other's yang. And it's like, you like a white mobile suit. I like zero white on my mobile suits. Like,
that's cool. It's interesting because I feel like for as much as we have in common within our bubble, we have our extreme differences. And I think that's very interesting. Okay. So then to go kind of to, it's funny that you're saying how you don't want any white, because what I'm going to do is, and to let, you know, you all know your video that you dropped, that was a surprise yesterday before the stream with the using the magic eraser type sponge for so many different techniques. One that is awesome is painting. And some people might not realize that you can get a good surface area at a good coating. So I'm going to take my high grade Mighty Strike, and I am going to replace anything that's not red with white.
Okay.
And then I'm going to get some real tight markings, but I think I want to go with something from the 08 MS team to kind of really sell more of that UC look.
Yeah. I'm digging that.
And you know, if anyone ever checks out the Gundam Breaker channel in the Gundam Explained server, Santo Bell has posted some builds that he does that actually look cool. And they have that aesthetic I like, where it's mainly white, has a little bit of gold, a little bit of red. It's interesting how much I don't care about the pilot. Like, at the end of the day, that's the thing. Like, I do not care about the character Kira at all. Yet,
no, and you know, go ahead. Yeah,
I was gonna say, I don't know how much I like the granddaddy because I like Amuro.
That's what I was just about to kind of speculate on. Is maybe we've been thinking about Seed all wrong? Is that the characters in Seed are the Gundams, not the pilots? That's one of the things that I would think about is, like, you know, nobody kind of. I mean, I don't want to say nobody, but like, compared to the amount of people that cosplay as Char or Amuro or Shiro, you know, for that matter, like UC characters tend to be pretty, pretty iconic.
Right.
But when it comes to Seed, I mean, obviously, like, everyone jokes about Kira, and obviously Atherin has his fans, but like, really it's the Gundams. Like, we like the Gundams.
I think so. And I think that is, I think, my reaction to the first Seed show. I wanted to watch it all the way through. I loved the music. I loved watching the fighting, but I didn't care about the characters, you know? And I think I like that. Then I can find that enjoyment. So we get this obsession here. Then I have all these Strike Freedoms. But again, I think it's the way I consume art.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, when I see a form, a design I really like, I like to, like, engross myself in it and, like, get the essence of it.
When you find a song you like, do you find yourself, like, listening to it over and over and over until you get tired of it?
Sure do.
Yeah.
In fact, what I try to do is, if I find a song I like, I try to find more that might be maybe from that artist or from that game or from that style. That way I'm not doing that to me. You know what I mean? Because I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah,
that's why I went a whole year, 2024, listening to just Castlevania music, because there's so many soundtracks. Never got tired of them. Anyway, glad I got to get this off my chest. This was a lot of fun with the Mighty Strikes. More to come. There'll be some videos.
I can't wait to see your next obsession.
Right? What is it going to be?
Man, we should do when people bet on.
Oh, like a bingo?
Like a pool, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, like, of what would it be? Because it might not be Gundam related. It might be some.
No, that's what's most exciting, because it was like Castlevania there for a while.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. That's another good example. Like,
I mean, you made that Richter Belmont figure that was. Yeah.
So, very good point there, because I was so obsessed that I made a custom figure of stuff I learned from using Gunpla. So that's kind of cool, like, narrowing in on the things you like and the hobbies you like, and then you can kind of cross them.
Absolutely.
An example, I just got this. This just got released. It's the Godzilla vs. Biollante 4K Criterion. now, I know I had been talking about Godzilla and I bought the 4Ks from Europe or whatever, and they did that AI upscaling. Do you remember we were talking about that? And I was like, the AI upscaling looks weird in some places, but some places it looks good because they take the film grain. I think you explained it that way. Well,
yeah,
this is the opposite. This is like where the film grain looks amazing because it's so grainy. But, you know, so it's very interesting to think that there could be two different ways you could upscale something. Make the dirt as dirty as possible or smooth it all out where there's where it's it looks very good, but then some close-ups sometimes, or some not necessarily close-ups, but some human faces sometimes will look odd depending on the depth of field. That's the only thing, but that Mantis release wasn't necessarily like an official. This is official Criterion, so it's very good quality. It even has an English commentary by a historian of Godzilla, which that's exciting. So
how does someone become a Godzilla historian? Like, I just imagine one of those like A&E documentary series where it's like, you know, they've got the lower thirds bar that says like Godzilla historian.
Dude,
it's like, well,
dude, we need to make some video called Zeta, a retrospective. And it's just you and I talking about Zeta, and it says Zeta historian, Zeta professional, Zeta expert. Why not?
Exactly.
That might be a good idea. We talk about our favorite things, themes, blah, blah, blah. And then we shoot it like studio professional.
Well, I mean, like I said, my wife and I had been watching Ancient Aliens, and she realized that guy, what's his name? The Greek guy.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
But she was like, wait a second. Like, he's got like a bachelor's degree in like journalism. Like he's not like a PhD in anything. He's not. And it's like, well, yeah. How do you have like an upper level doctorate degree in, I believe, aliens?
Yeah.
There's no like credentialism around that. And so it's like, you kind of get to create your own credentials, which is kind of cool. Like
it is. I think that is interesting to think about, like being an expert in something. Which, I don't know if I told you about this. You know Chris Williams?
Yeah.
Williamson?
Yeah.
The guy?
Chris Williams, Modern Wisdom.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw his podcast today.
Oh, I missed it. No.
It was great. A lady that was on there, I was listening to it. It's a behavioral person, like about how to be on camera.
Oh,
how interesting. How to act, and it was very interesting hearing all these things. I want to bring it up because I feel like people should go and check that out. I think it will make you feel more comfortable, you know, being on camera or talking or, and it's funny that I brought this up because I don't know why, but just letting you know, I think it's one of those things when we're just talking randomly and I'm like, hey, Steven, check this out.
Well, and honestly, people should check out Chris Williams.
Yeah, no, really.
His interview style is very good because he tends to just let people speak. And then he does his homework on them, and his questions are, I'm going to read you a quote of something you said. I want you to explain it to me.
Right.
Like
what helps is it's almost like the question he asks or his follow-ups are always very, I guess to explain the inverse, when an interviewee says something interesting and the interviewer goes to the next question.
Yeah.
It's like, well, wait a minute. Let's unpack this.
Yeah. Let's hover on that thought because there's probably some more.
Yeah. So he does a good job of that. Anyway, maybe I need to meet up with him and that behavioral psychologist about, look at my Mighty Strikes and say something about
me. Tell me exactly what it is that's going on.
Is it the nub
manifesting?
Is it the nub over there? Was it the panel lining? No, I don't know. okay. Well, speaking of nubs, we'll be working on in the future. That sounded odd. But let me get back to this.
You keep your nubs to yourself, sir.
Okay, that was good. Bandai announced the I'm trying to get to the top of it. Okay, the Rebin Wolf AOZ reboot version, which it's always awesome to get this style of kit because it's like you don't expect it, but then when you look at all the AOZ kits, it's like, oh, okay, well.
Yeah, these AOZ fans are eating good lately, right? Like between the Hyzaks,
yeah,
and just the sheer number of wound wart accessories and things. Like,
I know. I mean, even between Metal Robot Spirits and P Bandai, it's almost like they've almost got it all covered almost. The inlay, is that the giant one?
Yeah,
that's not going to happen. Although I think someone shared, didn't they share like someone made a scratch build inlay or something?
Yeah, I believe it.
Okay, so from this, let's see, dynamic articulation. Okay, gimmicks for action poses. Let's see, mono eyes adjustable. We expect that. I don't know if it's got too much crazy stuff. I think it looks awesome. The colors on it look awesome. One thing you brought up when we were talking was the add-on backpack of a Dovenwolf.
Yeah, I love that it is actually compatible with existing UC kits. So, like, this is one of the things that I wish that more high grades did, which is, like, as new high grades come out, they should, to some extent, be compatible with some other existing high grades. A perfect example would be, like, remember Ricky Hoskins, who won last year's Hobbytown model contest, you know, local to me. He did it with a Origin Zuda, which is he took the high grade Zuda and put Zaku Origin type legs on it and then made them high mobility. So, like,
that's cool.
But you can't do that with like everything, right? So it's just nice that this was designed with that in mind, like knowing that it is a variant of the Dovenwolf, you know, Revenwolf, making them compatible like that.
Yeah, and I think that is the takeaway here is it's cool that the kind of gimmick that's going on is kind of an in-universe thing.
Exactly.
Because yeah. I think it seems smart to make it where all the mobile suits have all interchangeable parts, but I guess in-universe canon-wise, that wouldn't necessarily be the case. So what could be? And a lot of the AOZ stuff does that, and we see that with the kits, so they do that. Okay, so let me ask you. I know the Psycho Gundam Mark II is an instant buy, but is this an instant buy?
I mean, for me, not really. Honestly, this is one of those things that looks to me, it looks like, if I were being honest, it looks like a full armor graze from IBO.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it, because to me, it's not necessarily Gundam-y. I even think having the green colors on it kind of takes away from the Advanced Zeta aesthetic, but I know they did that with these machines anyway. They have a few more like that. So,
I mean, the paint scheme is probably the thing I love the most about it, but still, I think that the design, it's not just like everything with AOZ, it just doesn't quite fit in the UC.
Right. Yeah. That's what I was about to say. It's not UC enough for me.
Exactly.
This is an example of a badass looking robot.
It is.
Yeah.
I wouldn't buy it as a Gundam, but I'd buy it as like a, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like if you came across it and it was cheap, but then that's very interesting. Coming across a kit that you wouldn't necessarily buy, but then you buy it. What's the chances of then building it?
Mm.
You wouldn't necessarily buy it, but you get it. Because I think that can happen sometimes. You might be like, well, I should have this. You know,
and then, but why should I have it?
Yeah. And then you just don't build it. You know,
well, you know, it's funny, like, because I pre-ordered the Desulter. From Mercury, like the P Bandai Desulter.
Oh, yeah, because that would be very out of norm for you, but I guess you just like the look.
Man, that design is just so awesome. It looks like an ODST Halo armor, you know?
Oh yeah. That is true. Yeah, that is cool how those things we come across those things every once in a while. So okay, let's actually look at the Revenwolf real quick. Just kind of curious about it, was developed by Zeon Mars. So this is a Zeon Mars suit. That adds more context to its kind of unique look.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, the shields do have that RF, like kind of like the RF Zaku and the RF Goof.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, I did not consider the Mars thing, but okay, more than a dozen units were produced and transported aboard the Chester Jr. Earth Deployment Fleet, also known as the Chester Space Fleet. However, by the time they arrived in the Earth sphere, an internal conflict had erupted within Neo Zeon. As a result, the units were never delivered and were instead sent back to Mars. Upon their return, they found Mars under the control of a hostile Zeon remnant faction known as Re-Zeon. With no safe harbor, the fleet proceeded with a planetary descent operation, deploying the units as the main force in the Phobos spaceport battle. Damn, that sounds awesome. This needs to be an anime.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, if I may, just slight tangent.
Yeah.
When I first started streaming, you know, Gundam 5e tabletop Gundam games, I came up with like a late UC story, and the enemy faction, the bad guy faction, was known as the Re-Sleeves. And everyone thought it was hilarious, and they were like, this is stupid. Why would they call them? And I was like, I'm sorry, but Re-Bawu, Re-Gelgu, like Re-Zeon. Nobody bats an eye when it's any of those things, but then I add a re to the beginning of sleeves and it's, wow, that's,
yeah, that's that's kind of weird. But I wonder if it's like sometimes maybe in context of what it is and people don't realize, oh, well,
yeah,
I guess, but you know, I have this thing that's supposed to pop up when, like a super chat comes in on this new thing I'm using, not that I got a super chat, but that
someone should test it out.
Yeah. I was testing it out and I left the preview up, but
no, I mean, someone watching should test it out.
Yes, please. And I need to test that 4 digits can fit in before the decimal place.
No, I'm joking. Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
Okay. Next thing real quick. Anyway, it was real cool to learn more about this Reben Wolf, because I've never really paid attention to that specifically. And
I love that kind of history where it's like, you know, it was supposed to be delivered and then it got, you know, intercepted. Like, well, it's just one of those that, well, I guess we'll never know.
Well, yeah, that made me think about like an intro to a movie where you have these guys, you know, going aboard. What do they say? They went to with, and then wherever it happened, and then they sent the suits back.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the idea of like, it's like a quick intro. And then they're like, oh, we got to get back to Mars. But then they get back and find out that, you know, I guess that Zeon faction kind of took over. And then, like, you know, it's neat because it would be something outside of, way outside, although they've done that before, the Char and Amuro legacy, but during that period.
Yeah.
Even if they make callbacks to, like, you know, Titans and getting the gas from Jupiter. And I would love to hear more logistics, because they didn't use, you know, they didn't have the technology of warping.
Yeah, they don't do like FTL travel. So we're talking about like months in space.
But I did read something, and I don't remember if I brought it up in my video, that sometimes that these ships would have the certain type of that magnetic coating, the static electric coating that helps reduce the drag. But, you know, they'd be in space. So I guess it's the drag of between the planets, the gravity.
Possibly so. Yeah. You know, that'd be interesting. Let's revisit that next week. I've got my my Gundam RPG manual that has like the distances, and the travel times for those, because that would be an interesting thing to kind of try and do a little forensic work about what the timing of, you know, would they have been like ships in the night, like the Jupiteress passing?
Yeah. That's what I think.
On their way, like, back,
what was going on in that lane, if there was a lane? Does that become more of a Jupiter sphere? Because then very fascinating stuff. Okay. Oh, space drag from the solar winds. Thanks, Jamkel X. That's what it was. Okay. Which is interesting. Like, I love that they can explain it, and I love that they didn't decide to just use warp technology.
Yeah.
And they have to explain that, oh, it does take a while. I love that stuff. Okay. So another little model kit thing I wanted to show you guys is this Batman model kit. So for those, you know, just listening, you might not be able to see it, but it is the Batman from the beginning of the Flash movie, where it was Ben Affleck, but in like a gray and blue on the motorcycle. You know, I'm a big fan of Batman, and I like the Ben Affleck, but they don't have an action. There is a Todd McFarlane action figure, but I'm not into those as much.
Yeah.
So this was a full-on model kit. I built it.
What brand?
I don't have the box. It's a Chinese manufacturer. I've never heard of them. So no one that I think we'd recognize. But what's interesting is you would build the whole action figure. You don't need to paint it. And I might be able to see, but like he's already painted and it already has like
yeah, I was gold. Gonna say, the colors on it look fantastic.
Yeah. And even like where you see the armor on the chest, see the and the legs, those are like rubber pieces that wrap around and plug in. So it gives it that depth. This was so fun to build. It was just like building Gunpla. And what's also cool is it came with like an accessories tray where you don't have to build the head. He comes with like action figure quality, multiple heads with faces, multiple hands, the guns, batarangs. He even has it in the grapnel gun. You could put in a little wire in the grappling hook. They went all out.
Dude, that's so cool.
Yeah, I do like the idea of building my action figures because I almost feel like, again, it's like I get more into the process of it, I guess.
I do feel like more modern model kits have that more action figure quality.
Yeah.
They feel a little bit more sturdy. Like,
yeah, I think so, too. Even the Lunamaria that I built, you know, because I find it interesting that they have this to build, but they have Kira to buy or, you know, the Shin. I would get a Shin to buy. They have an action figure of them.
Yeah.
Stuff is fun. So it's like, for me, it's not necessarily about building a robot. It's just the building in general. And it's just, I like robots. So, yeah. But actually on both of these, another little thing I wanted to show is this stand that I found on Amazon. I need to link this to you guys. I have a lot of action figure stands, Gunpla stands. I've never been able to find the best one. I think this is the best one. Probably not master grade unless it's a smaller master grade just because of the size of the base and
if you have
weight. But what you do is you get, it comes with, I think it's like three different poles at three different lengths. So you can kind of get a height you want. It comes with screws and a screwdriver to screw it on. It even comes with a peg that fits in any high grade Gunpla master grade. And then it even comes with two different types of claws to use. Like if you wanted to do that and, it, there's something like, so this base here is thicker and stronger than a typical, I don't have one near me, like a Bandai ACT base. Like this is sturdy and thick. It, the same with this. And, you know, I've always talked about you want good bases for your stuff. You don't want it to fall, break or whatever. So
yeah,
I'll get the link out to you guys for this, but check Amazon third party stands.
That's so cool. Yeah. Do you think, and that, so this is kind of a personal question about that. Do you think that, because I'm looking for some kind of mechanism to support the Mercurius and V8 that I'm wiring up. Do you think I could run wires through that, through the arm if I had to?
I feel like you could, because when you put it together,
yeah,
you're actually putting in the piece that then connects them. And there's a hole before you put in the screw. So maybe you would drill in it.
Yeah.
And then maybe the wire could kind of go around. I don't know.
Interesting.
That would be, but that's actually a good idea of
finding one of the things that like action bases lack is the ability to wire up some kind of electronic component.
So that's probably what needs to be key is us trying to find the right base for LEDing stuff.
Because
there's those bigger ones like that come with the metal robot spirits and all that that would be able to do that for sure. Like for the Chogokin, I had to drill in to put in the brass tube.
Yeah.
So yeah, you could drill in to put a wire. So that's pretty cool. Nice. Yeah. Okay. Another thing we're going to go to real quick. I'm going to go back to the screen share and switch to in Battle Operation 2, the Denen Zon, which, you know, from F91, which is interesting. I have the Robot Spirits Denen, but I think there's like different variants. And this is probably like a 2013 release. So this is one of the earlier, it's interesting that in the early Robot Spirits, they made more obscure mobile suits.
Yeah, so this is interesting.
And this one that was piloted by that dude that wanted to get with Cecily, right? I could be wrong, but I think so, where he gave her the flower.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if I've reviewed these for the channel, but they're older. They're robot spirits, but they're kind of the older kind.
So for a while, it did seem like robot spirits were more of the, you know, like you said, they would make obscure mobile suits because they knew they weren't going to do a mass release, like a mass market release of a Gunpla.
Yeah.
So it was like, well, we might as well, if we're going to make something, we're going to make it more of a higher end collectible.
Yeah. Just like the Big Zam. Or yeah. There's another thing, you know, kind of being newer to like the Godzilla fandom. There's stuff outside that, like Gamera, yeah. However you pronounce that. There's a creature called Legion, and Bandai just came out for the pre-order for the SH Monster Arts Legion, and it's like $400. And then I was watching this news about it. The guy's like, oh my God, I can't believe Bandai's doing this. What are they doing? And I was like, well, Big Zam, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I think it's what you were kind of saying, instead of like a model kit, it might be better to make a premium figure, you know, that just has a limited run or something. So those that want, because I'm a huge fan of F91, you know, like it and it's kind of like a vibe thing. but it really is a vibe thing, because I like it. Yeah. Not, I like it outside of Gundam. I just like to know it's a future Gundam. It's like, oh, that's cool.
And the animation is fantastic, and I mean, it's just so good. Like that early 90s animation, there's just nothing quite like it.
Well, yeah, let me ask you about that. I wonder if when we see 90s animation, we're seeing the height of human ability with hand-drawn. And then once we get to CGI, once we get to that stuff being done with computers, maybe it's just not as apparent.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's definitely a component of that. I think that there's also... I was noticing this because I went back and I started watching some episodes of the original 79 series. And, you know, one of the things I've always talked about is like, I love how they have these steady shots on characters where it's like, there's no animation happening. It's just like maybe a zoom in, or it's like a pan or something like that. And I know that they're doing it for budget reasons. Like, obviously they just don't want to animate those frames. And so they resort to various tricks in order to make that work. But what I've noticed is that in modern animation, and what gives it away even more is when you compare it to like G-Quux, is the animation in G-Quux, because it's CGI, or like CGI assisted, I should say, like, you know, they're utilizing digital animation techniques in it. There's a lot of motion going on screen that, and this goes back to what I was saying about like kind of feeling motion sick while I was watching it, is when you watch Amuro getting up in the Gundam, it's a very steady shot of like, you know, he's in the cockpit, and it, you know, the camera just kind of pans and rises up. But when Char is in the Gundam in G-Quux, it's jerking around, and even though that's more realistic, it doesn't look good. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, because it's almost like a look over here, yet you're missing the artwork. Because I can see that, and like, I
think too much camera shake in movies nowadays is it can take away from the action.
Okay, you brought up something in my mind. So, you know,
I just went on like a huge tangent of like different bouncing around.
No, this is good. You know, like the 90s animation, sometimes it's so well done where like it almost looks like it's slow motion, but it's not.
Yeah,
because I think they are putting so many frames in to sell the impact of what is occurring animation wise.
Right.
And then doing that by hand means there is not like some sort of designated number of frames. Whereas when the stuff is done at a computer, it's probably, and I don't know, like frame one, frame two, frame three. But when you're drawing by hand, one frame might just be off just a little bit, and it gives it this more raw look that can't be replicated with a computer.
Absolutely. And I think that you can sense that in music too. Like when you compare playing an instrument to like putting down a track in Fruity Loops, like obviously everything in Fruity Loops has to be very deliberate and on beat, but there are certain things that you can do with an instrument where you can be intentionally off and like have that swing that goes, and like there's ways that you can program that in different like digital audio. What's that?
It's not as organic.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, that's a very good point, because as someone that loves to drum, like it's way easier for me to have my electric drum set here and to play that, but it is nothing like playing on an acoustic set. Like it's fine enough for me to play what I want to play, you know, and, but if I really wanted to like get into the groove with other people and be able to improvise, it's easier with acoustic.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. Because how easy would it be to improvise? Like when you're making electronic music, either it's like, okay, this is what I'm going to make the beat, or what I do sometimes is I click a bunch of different places and then I play it and I'm like, okay, this sounds neat. Okay, I'll move this here, you know, just for some random way to get some sounds. But when you're playing with people live, there's something about like this cohesion of like on the spot, you can change something, but then you don't have to think, okay, now how do I reconfigure the track?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Cool stuff. Yeah, it's about that artwork. Okay. Something else that I wanted to show off too. Let me
Oh, I see what you're doing. You're shopping for more Mighty Strikes.
I know. Well, this is a new, and so because I knew you were gonna say that, here, RX-78-2. No.
Okay.
But no, so this is a whole new line.
Yeah, I see this Block Cross.
They're called Block Cross. And I do kind of like this. So they are kind of like Mobile Suit Ensemble in terms of scale, like the small that they're articulated. But what's
cool, I love the proportions.
What's that?
I love the proportions.
Yeah, right. Because it's not like super SD, but it's enough to get articulation. So the idea is it's called Block Cross because you get like this block skeleton, but you can actually move it around however you want. It's fully articulated, and then you put the armor on it. And so they're going to have a few in the line, but this example is supposed to be you get a bunch of different ones. You can cross their armor, which is pretty cool, you know, to change armor around. I got to say, I like that. but they're $20 each.
Oof.
Which, I mean, my thought is it could be that they're $20 because these guys are importing them or something, but I'm going to see if maybe it might be cheaper some way to get it in jam. But I like this kind of thing. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I dig it. I think that obviously it's one of those things where, and we kind of alluded to this yesterday when we were talking about the Gundam card game, where it's like, I like that they've already announced other like additional release dates down the line for the Gundam card game, because you know that there's more things coming. What worries me about something like the Block Cross line is that it's like, okay, so we know that we've got an RX-78. It looks like there was a Musha Gundam, and we've got the Mighty Strike Freedom. It's like, I want to know that, you know,
on that,
that maybe there's a Mark II coming in October, and then maybe like a Tall Geese coming in January, you know, stuff like that, where it's like, I know that there's intent behind this line. You know what I mean?
I do. And it's funny because they look exactly like Mobile Suit Ensemble. So I hope that then it doesn't stop. I don't know. Cause I don't know if I get them, I don't really care. But again, this is kind of like, how am I nice about saying this? It's kind of like junk toys. It's like, I don't need this, but it's fun just to have around and play and all that. Like, you know, but they do have a Justice there.
I see that.
Is that Infinite or Immortal? Okay. I don't feel bad.
I think that's the Infinite, because the Immortal kind of has like a different chest shape.
Okay.
Now that might be the Spec 2 Infinite.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Because if they're going to do the Mighty Strike, then.
Yeah, if they're doing the Mighty Strike, yeah, that's probably. So weird that they don't have a Zaku here, or I wonder if that has to do with the interchangeability. Would they really make it that?
That's a good question. Yeah. And, you know, I could go off on such a tangent about that, but suffice to say, yeah, I think that there's probably something about the silhouette that is not compatible with these Gundams.
Yeah, that's. Yeah, that's interesting. Anyway, yeah, that's just a cool new thing. April 26th. You know, well, so now that these, brings up something else.
Can I ask a question? The Black Cross figures, is it only Gundam or are there other franchises involved with this? Because that would be an interesting, like, it seems like Black Cross is branded. Like a brand. Yeah. Kirin Maru?
Oh, yeah, look at this.
So there you go. So this isn't like
a new line. This is like a set they're coming out for, a line that already exists. That's like a branded, pretty neat. I might check this out anyway. You know what? It's funny. This reminds me a lot of, and I've talked about it before, like the Mobile Suit Ensemble, but when I was a kid at the Walmart, the gumball machine, I got my first robot and built it. And
yeah,
you know, like, that's what these kind of remind me of. Yeah, I really like that. Well, cool. So, it's good that you brought that up at the end, because I didn't consider that.
It only just occurred to me, like, wait a second, this seems like a bigger, because it would be like having a Lego expansion of Gundam.
Right. Yeah. It's like, what? Yeah. Which they could do. Oh, yeah. You know, that reminded me. Do I have it up? Yes, I do. I'm glad I've been saving some links. So G.I. Joe, and I guess it's sold out now, they sell a mech, and it's for the 6-inch line of figures, which is really awesome.
Yeah.
And it's only $75, which seems like a good deal. I don't really collect these, but I feel like I would get a G.I. Joe mech, and it has, I don't know if they're articulated fingers, but it has like hands. And I like that about a robot weapon.
It's pretty cool. You know, it reminds me of like the Hardballer from Lost Planet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's cool that you're able to name check that. Hardballer. Not many people would be able to do that.
Yeah, I don't remember if they have ever actually said it in the game.
Yeah, I don't think so. The only way I knew it is because I had the figure. Like they had a special figure that you could buy for, like, it might have came with a special edition, but I just bought it off eBay.
Nice. Yeah. I have like the art book that came with the book with the game. Yeah. And yeah.
Yeah. That's a cool one. I always feel like, yeah, Lost Planet. Definitely a good idea for, they need to continue with that. Wait a minute. Didn't Capcom recently just say that they were going to be making another game for another older IPs?
I think they did hint at that.
And I was thinking Dino Crisis, just because of the, I think they, but I wonder if it could be Lost Planet, because I think it makes sense if they wanted to kind of revisit the first one, even the second one with the co-op aspect, if they could do it in a way that, so yeah, because one thing I don't think many people got to experience with Lost Planet 2 is the combiner level. When you're in space and you can combine two mechs, and
that's so awesome.
I know. And I didn't know I could do that until I saw a video. And so then, you know, I went back and followed the thing to do it. And I was like, dude, this is, it's interesting to think sometimes late game of a game can be an experience that, you know, people don't experience. Oh, I can't believe this jumped in my head. So Front Mission has a third person shooter game. It's not like the tactical ones. I think it's called Front Mission Evolved.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. I've played through it and beat it. Did you too?
No, I watched the gameplay and I was like, I can get down on this. This is pretty sweet.
Because it plays like a sweet, cool mech game. Nothing amazing. But the end game is like insane mech on mech combat constantly. Like, I remember when I beat it, I was telling my brother, you need to play this game just to beat the last boss. Like,
which kind of goes against your normal approach to games, where it's like, once you've played through enough of it, it's like, okay, I'm done. Like, I don't need to finish the game. Like, Lost Planet is one of those titles, and it sounds like Front Mission, at least the third person shooter version, are the type of games where it's like, no, you really have to play the entire thing to be able to judge whether or not you like the game or not.
You know what? With Front Mission, it's one of those where the reviews make sense, because the initial gameplay loop is pretty simple. There's nothing to it, but it's the type of game that I like. This is like, okay, it's straightforward action. I can have fun with it. But it's that last boss that then But see, I don't know if most people would be willing to sit through its sort of basic gameplay. And the level design, too, isn't the hottest. So
yeah,
sometimes you it's almost like you're just going through Xbox 360 textures. And it's like, where am I? Yeah, so, okay. Okay, another thing. Yeah, we got about 5 more minutes. So yesterday, yesterday on your show, like near the end, or at one point, and I'm glad you brought it up. You brought up the Psycho Gundam Mark II because I completely forgot.
Yeah.
We could be getting it any day now. So other than that, are there other Gunpla releases coming out soon that we're waiting for? I know that the Puru 2, right?
Oh, yeah.
That they it's a Gunpla person.
Yeah, yeah, but, figure eyes.
But because it's Double Zeta, like, or, you know, because it's what it represents, I think that's awesome.
Yeah, and you said you were probably going to get that that backpack thing that goes on the Z-Gok from Seed Freedom, right?
Oh, that's right. The
what is it even called?
Something. It has a C and an F and an R in it and a D. I don't know. Cadillac Corvette.
Sure.
Yeah. I am so glad you brought that up because I want to get that in the Z-Gok, and that's actually being shipped.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mightily spent my budget a month, so I'm going to have to wait a little bit, but I so want to get that, actually. Is that one that you...
No. Is it bad to say that, like, the only Gunpla that I'm really excited about, there's a couple of P-Bandais, and then, of course, the Psycho Mark II, but it's like I'm almost more excited for the Gundam Assemble figures that are coming with the cards. Like,
nah, that dude, I get it. Well, that's the thing. I think there comes a point in a Gundam collector's life, I guess, where it's not that, oh, the Cavalier, thank you. It's not that you aren't excited. I guess it's more of there's so much exciting that's actually already there.
Yeah. It's like, I think, and we've talked about this when it comes to video games, it's like you become much more discerning and discriminating about what you really want to spend your time building. It's like you're not going to go out and buy every kit. I think somebody posted, who was it? Oh, man. I remember somebody posted an article that was like, wait a minute, how can you tell me that, like, spending $600 on airbrush equipment is going to help save me money on Gunpla? And it's like, oh, because I used to spend $2,000 a year just buying kits, snapping them, and putting them on a shelf. Now, every kit that I spend time with takes more time because I'm painting it, because I'm customizing it, because I'm detailing it. And so the overall is that you're spending less money on Gunpla because you're putting more into every kit instead of just snapping them really quick and throwing them out. Like, and I think there's something to that. I think model kits are not meant to be just snapped and thrown aside. Like, I think that we get in that collector habit, right?
Yeah. I think there is something very real about snapping a kit together real quick. Mm-hmm. Especially when I'm just sitting there.
Thank you, Artie. It was Artie who posted it. Yeah.
Oh, what's that?
Artie in chat just said that it was from a book that she posted.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah. Cause it's like when, I feel like there's a therapeuticness, you know, to that snap build, and maybe that's fine. But yeah, the idea of taking your time with it, because I feel like your time focusing on something is like a well-spent currency.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't really get too many times to do that. And it's kind of hard sometimes because how many times can you really sit there and focus on something long-term? Like, for instance, video games. I play a lot of video games, but I usually only do it in up to an hour interval because I can quickly be like, okay, I've had enough.
Yes.
And then usually I'll go to, like, you know, start a build or, you know, whatever other hobby I'm working on.
But like you said, like there's some video games that you'll pour 70 hours into, and then there's some that you'll play 35 minutes and then you're like, ah, that's, I'm good.
Yeah. And it's crazy how that stuff works. And it's crazy how, and I love how personal it is sometimes. Like, you know, who else is really going to spend, you know, what, 30 hours on Godzilla PS3 and then 40 plus already on PS4, and I still haven't gotten the trophy yet. I'm doing the same thing over and over. Like, I love finding other people's personal things they do. Like the fact of what you're doing with those wing kits.
Yeah. Yeah,
I absolutely never hear anyone talk about doing something like that. You know, it's a very specific and cool, you know, part of the hobby. You know, that's always fun to find.
I think so.
Yeah. But yeah, so, I mean, that's about it, guys. That's it for this episode. That was a lot of fun. I guess it's nice to have some links to pull up, you know, to talk about some stuff. I mean, it's a lot of that stuff is stuff to buy. I don't think I can do it all, but, I gotta say, if I was going to get one thing from everything we showed, that would be really hard because it's all very different, but maybe that G.I. Joe mech.
That one is pretty sweet.
Yeah, just because it's kind of different. Maybe I could throw in my Wolverine into the mech.
I was gonna say, aren't the Gundam the GMG figures that scale?
No, actually, that's what's crazy. This is 6-inch for 6-inch scale, which is huge. That's why I thought 75 was pretty good.
Wow. Yeah. Huh.
Yeah, that's very cool. But anyway, again, thanks for watching. We'll be back next week. And again, check, both Steven and I had drops this week. So if you haven't got your Gundam fill in, there's some cool content from lore to like hobby how-to stuff. So
yeah. Stuff, yeah. And an excellent review of the Gundam XX.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Really cool, badass looking combined space fighter. You guys got to check that out. But all right, we're going to head out. So all have a good weekend. We'll talk later.
Cheers.